Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
Over 2,000 migrants have been rescued in the last 2 days from many vessels found adrift in the Mediterranean Sea off the coast of Libya.
That's a reporter Antonella Sferraza describing the latest attempts by migrants to reach Italy. Details coming up.
Also, Amnesty International is calling on Nigeria to investigate claims of hundreds of civilians buried in a mass grave. And Burundi says its simmering political conflict has killed scores of people and led to the arrest of over 100 since the beginning of the year.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, Coast Guard and naval vessels from Italy and other countries have been very busy the past few days rescuing migrants and refugees trying to cross the Mediterranean. The sea crossing from North Africa to Europe is heating up again now that the Balkans route is closed and the deal between the EU and Turkey has resulted in few migrants crossing the Aegean since March 20th trying to reach Greece. Most of those trying to reach Europe are leaving from Libya, and most are from Africa, not Syria. Reporter Antonella Sferraza is monitoring rescue operations as well as new moves by Austria to control the flow of migrants from Italy. From Palermo, she spoke to VOA's Joe DiCapua.
Over 2,000 migrants have been rescued in the last 2 days from many vessels found adrift in the Mediterranean Sea off the coast of Libya in about 15 separate operations. As far as we know, there were no casualties and all the migrants were taken to Sicily. As expected, the numbers of migrants crossing the Mediterranean is going up sharply as a result of good weather and as a result of the closing of the Balkan routes. What we can say is that Europe migrant crisis is getting worse day by day as the European Union members are taking individual national measures. As we know, Austria is planning to bring back tighter controls of its borders with Italy, and workers have started building a new border control checkpoint, the Brenner Pass, which links Austria and Italy through the Alps.
Tell us how important the Brenner Pass is, and what exactly is Austria doing there?
At the moment, we only know that Austria wants to bring back tighter controls. And they started yesterday building a new border control. The Vienna government is concerned that the closing of the Balkan route from Greece towards Austria will lead migrants to attempt to cross by sea from Libya to Italy and then by land through the Brenner Pass. Officials expect as many as 300,000 people to arrive in Italy by sea this year. The move has sparked anger in Italy. Italian foreign minister brought a letter to European Union Migration Commissioner demanding that he urgently raise the issue with Vienna. The European Union says it's very concerned and that Austria is violating European rules. But the truth is that Austria is not the only country tightening its borders to stem the flow of refugees. There are other countries who have done the same. Hungary was the first to try to block the migrant routes with a fence. And other countries, such as Slovenia and Bulgaria, have erected similar obstacles. But even Germany, Sweden and Norway reestablished border controls in September, and France did the same after the Paris terror attack. The result is that the Schengen Agreement on open borders is actually suspended. And as a country of first arrival, Italy has more to lose from the breakdown of Schengen than any other European nation, perhaps with the exception of Greece. This is why the Italian government is calling once again for a stronger international cooperation, and this is why it's strongly condemning the Austria decision. But we have to say that the Italian public opinion is not that surprised by the Austria move, and it's not condemning Austria, as the perception is that tighter control will be necessary also in Italy, both for security issue and terror threat.
Is Italy taking any stricter measures regarding the migrants?
The public opinion is asking for Italy to do more to control our borders, although it's very difficult because migrants arrive in Italy by sea. The question perhaps is, does the European Union still exist? The European Union has failed to provide a response to the crisis. And beyond the words and the official statements, there is a strong sense among policymakers that national leaders in Europe lack the political will to bolster and support the Schengen system in crisis. They are more focused on cutting borders by ignoring Schengen in favor of national remedies, and maybe Italy should do the same.
That's reporter Antonella Sferrazza in Palermo, Sicily. She spoke with VOA's Joe DiCapua. In related news, European Council President Donald Tusk says there is an alarming number of migrants in Libya preparing to cross the Mediterranean. Reuters reports that Tusk is calling for international help to manage the situation. Tusk says the political turmoil in Libya prevents a deal similar to that worked with Turkey to restrict the flow of migrants and refugees.
Nigeria's interior minister has announced the government is returning more than 1 million civilians to their homes. They were displaced in the northeast during a 7-year insurgency by Boko Haram rebels. Lieutenant General Abdurrahman Dambazu announced the beginning of resettlement project yesterday in Abuja. In other news, the rights group Amnesty International is calling on Nigeria to investigate claims of hundreds of civilians buried in a mass grave in Kaduna State. The military clashed with civilians in the Shiite town of Zaria in mid-December. The government says residents ambushed a military convoy to try to assassinate Nigeria's army chief. A Kaduna state government official told the Commission of Inquiry this week that after the clash, soldiers took more than 340 bodies from a mortuary and buried them in a remote site. Zaria residents claim about 1,000 people actually died in the clash. Also, in southern Nigeria, the French news agency Côte Police in Taraba State are saying that Fulani cattlemen killed 15 residents of Dori and Misuma villages and burned their homes. Local media put the death toll at 44. It's the latest violence in a long dispute over grazing rights.
With a rising tide of terrorist attacks by groups like Boko Haram, Al-Shabaab, and Islamic State in North Africa and the Sahel, experts stress the need to counter their ideology that exploits Islam to justify violence. Our senior Middle East reporter, Mohammed El-Shanawi, asked Joseph Siegel, Director of Research at Africa Center for Strategic Studies, about an initiative to use experienced Algerian imams to counter such ideology.
Yeah, I think the concept of bringing educated, respected imams to talk about how the tenets of Islam apply when it's being invoked for violence, I think is important. One of the important aspects of the militant Islamic movement we're seeing is that, you know, this is an ideology that is resonating with certain populations. And so to effectively combat this, you're going to need to deal with it on an ideological level. This isn't just a military struggle. Even if some of these groups are defeated militarily, you are going to still need to deal with the ideological resonance of the message. This is a very important aspect of it, to have a conversation within these communities about, you know, what are the teachings of Islam when it comes to violence, and what Islam teaches match with what is happening and the actions of some of these terrorist groups like ISIS. And I think that's a conversation that is going to have to happen over a long period of time, but it's an important conversation that often hasn't been happening because, again, these are often marginalized areas with limited educational opportunities, and the message of Islam has been manipulated for political interest of these groups.
So far, we see countries in North Africa and in Sahel focusing only on counter-terrorism efforts. What would constitute a coherent strategy to counter violent extremism in this area?
You know, a counter-terrorism strategy will not solve the problem on its own. It's an ideological issue. It's a social issue. It's a governance issue. And so to reverse the appeal and the trend of support we have seen in recent years for some of these militant messages, it's going to have to be dealt with across each of these sectors. You know, a cohesive strategy would first deal with the message. You know, why is this message resonating with so many youth? And to really challenge that, to confront the mischaracterization of Islam as a justification for violence among these communities. In the meantime, the social and political grievances have to be met. Many of these areas where there is support for militant movements are poor. There is going to have to be a greater concerted effort to include these communities as part of a broader economic development strategy. There's going to need to be investments in education, health, road networks, skills training, so that these youth see a path forward that is more hopeful, that is more positive for them by participating in these formal structures of society. And in many of these places, governments aren't highly present. And to the extent that they are, there's often a strong perception of corruption, that government officials are not there to serve local populations. They are there to exploit the populations. This builds up resentment, a sense that we can't trust the government, and then the only way we're going to realize our own potential and our own opportunities is to resist and fight government. And so there needs to be a transformation of governance in the region.
Joseph Siegel is Director of Research at Africa Center for Strategic Studies. He spoke with VOA's Mohammed Elshenawy.
The head of Libya's internationally recognized parliament in Tobruk has criticized the UN envoy to Libya. Council of Deputies President Aguiel Al says Martin Kobler is trying to dictate terms to a new unity government. Kobler negotiated with two rival governments and many armed Libya militias to help establish the government of national accord. The Council of Deputies is scheduled to meet Sunday to decide if they will join the unity government in Tripoli. Most members of a rival government in Tripoli have already thrown their support to the unity government led by Faiz al-Sarj and a presidential council.
Minutes past the hour. This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. The government of Burundi says that since the beginning of the year, the country's simmering political conflict has killed scores of people and led to the arrest of over 100. Violence began last year when President Pierre Nkurunziza announced he'd seek another term in office. Opponents say the move was unconstitutional. Moses Habayarimana reports from the capital.
Targeted assassinations and grenade attacks have rocked the country for almost a year now. In the capital Bujumbura, it's common to see 24-hour checkpoints and roadblocks, as well as regular cordon and search operations in opposition strongholds. In a press briefing, the Minister of Public Security, Ale Bunyoni, says that 46 people have been killed for the last 3 months.
The terrorist group members have engaged throwing grenades in public places, especially in Bujumbura municipality, and on the eve of the visits of political dignitaries in our country. Since January 2016, these terrorists threw on defenseless civilians, women and children, in most of cases, more than 115 grenades.
The government says about 696 people have been detained on criminal charges since the beginning of the conflict over a year ago. Minister Bunyoni says this year alone, over 100 have been arrested for their alleged involvement in attacks on civilians. The United States Assistant Secretary, Bureau of Democracy and Human Rights, Tom Malinowski, recently visited Bujumbura. He says that the situation in the country on human rights remains extremely grave. He criticized the government for continuing to imprison members of opposition. Malinowski also says there has been an increase in forced disappearances and of credible allegations of torture of government opponents. In his remarks to the press, Minister Bunyoni again accused the neighboring Rwanda of trying to destabilize Burundi.
150 terrorist actors and perpetrators of crimes were arrested. They revealed the sponsors of these terrorist acts to be at the high level, hosted and supported by the Rwanda government. They reported having brutally murdered the three Italian nuns on the parish convent called Guido Maria Conforti of Kamenge.
Burundi's Justice Minister, Laurentine Kanyana, says that the judicial system is looking into the convent murders. She says at the stage where they have been collected all evidences, that the security forces bring them and is one of the processes of investigation, but will only await for the judge to decide who is responsible. Violence continued this week in Burundi with attacks by unidentified gunmen on a market in the country's eastern Ruyigi region near Tanzania. The French press agency says 5 people were killed and 7 wounded. The United Nations says over 400 people have been killed over the past year. The government says they include many ruling party supporters killed by opposition, a notion denied by government critics. Meanwhile, over 250,000 people have fled the country since political conflict began last year. From Bujumbura, I'm Moses Havyarimana for VOA Africa.
Last week, the DRC government expelled the director of U.S. think tank researching violence in the eastern part of the country. The government says there were technical problems with Jason Stern's visa. However, Stern says it may have something to do with allegations raised in a recent report by his Congo Research Project, part of New York University's Center for International Cooperation. The report centered on the killings of hundreds of villagers in northeast DRC since 2014. The Kinshasa government blamed ADF Ugandan rebels. However, last month, the Congo Research Project report accused Congolese soldiers and other militias of also being responsible for some of the deaths. Stearns told VOA's Adam Phillips that he may have been expelled partly because officials were angered and embarrassed by his report.
We issued a report on a series of massacres in the northeastern part of the Congo that has been going on since October of 2014 around a town called Beni. And since 2014, over 500 people have been massacred in some of the worst violence in recent history in the Congo. And yet very little was understood about who was behind this. And so we, again, investigative reporting, we interviewed about 110 people, including many eyewitnesses to the massacres, and we issued a report on the 21st of March.
And what was your conclusion in this report that was so hot?
Our conclusion was twofold. First of all, the predominant narrative was that the massacres were being carried out by a Ugandan Islamist armed group called the ADF. Within the DRC, right? They're based in the foothills of the Ruwenzori Mountains in the eastern DRC that they were carrying out these massacres. Our first conclusion was that, yes, the ADF indeed are the primary responsible, but the ADF are not the ADF most people paint them to be. In other words, the ADF are much more anchored and embedded in local society. This is a political problem and a social problem as much as it is just a military problem. They were trying to see this as an outside jihadist force driven by radical Islam. And that's really just one small part of the story. These guys have been there for 20 years, and you really need to understand their relations with local society and politics. That's the first conclusion. The second one, which was the hot one, or the hotter one, was that certain members of the Congolese armed forces themselves participate in these massacres, as well as other armed groups based in the neighborhood. We said we were not able to establish a chain of command. So we were not able to understand the direct links between the Congolese army and the ADF. There are obviously links, but was this just the ADF infiltrating the Congolese army? We don't think so. There's something else going on there, and there's some pretty complicated local politics, part of which we get into in the report. But what happened was that 3 days after our report came out, the Congolese Minister of Information gave a press conference during which he dramatically simplified our argument, in fact, actually twisted our argument, and said that we are smearing the entire Congolese armed forces and saying that they are the responsible for the massacre, which is very different from what we said, which was that certain members are participating in these massacres and the ADF are the primary responsible. And so I think that one of the reasons that I was detained and then expelled from the Congo was because our report had been either purposely or accidentally misconstrued and understood by authorities.
Make it clear why they would expel you for that reason.
I think you need to take a step back. What is the current context in the DRC? The Congo is headed to potentially the most important election in recent history. The incumbent president, Joseph Kabila, is due to step down at the end of the year. This could be the first democratic transfer of executive power in the country's history ever. And that would be not only dramatic, but obviously it is have dramatic consequences for those who are currently in power. And indeed, those who are currently in power have been taking steps to prolong their stay in power. And during my conversations with intelligence officials who detained me, they mentioned the Beni report, our report on these massacres, but they also mentioned the fact that I was in Kinshasa conducting research on the electoral process, which was what brought me there, and that they felt that some of the questions I was asking were tendentious. They accused me in particular of trying to rile up or of saying that the army may not be loyal to the president, which I never said.
What do you think is really going on here?
I think it's very difficult to know. I think that the problem is I had a series of very polite, cordial meetings with intelligence officials during which they gave me polite advice on what I should do and shouldn't do in the country. And then they put me in a car and drove me to the airport and said, you're leaving the country because you're quote-unquote undesirable, which was the official reason they put on the expulsion document. At the moment, the most prudent thing is just to take a step back, try to figure out what happened. They said, apply for another visa and see what happens. I am in the process of applying for another visa, and I'll see what happens.
That was Jason Stearns, director of the Congo Research Group, part of New York University's Center for International Cooperation. Stearns spoke with VOA's Adam Phillips in New York. The UN says violence in eastern Congo has intensified in the recent months. There is concern it could disrupt national elections scheduled for November. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned for the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nick Ivanoff, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss the International Criminal Court and African leaders, as well as ICC's ruling on Kenya's Deputy President William Ruto. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
Can't get enough of the Sunny Side of Sports? Well, we've solved that problem. We now have a half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. So visit voanews.com for more details and enjoy the show.
voaafrica.com.
On voaafrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.